your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. So after Afghanistan, why hasn't Joe Biden's approval rating bounced back at all? In fact, it has collapsed. It's fallen off a cliff. What is the very essence of the problem that Joe Biden faces? As we were talking about last hour, I believe the very essence of it is the appearance that he has surrendered to the left, that the lunatics have taken over the asylum, that Joe Biden has a return to a mainstream democratic rule, not conservative by any means, but certainly not radical, that was being avoided. Right now, the socialist wing of the Democratic Party, and by the way, that's not a use of a term that people don't welcome. AOC is a member of named socialist organizations, the Democratic Socialists of America. There are other members of the squad who also identify directly and proudly as socialists. This is a very real problem, because what it means is all those people who voted for Joe Biden, particularly the independents and others, have become increasingly alarmed. That's why you have an approval rating for the president of the United States right now of 38%. It means by almost two to one, the people in this country disapprove of what he is doing and how he is performing his job. This is the way it's covered. And again, not on Fox News, not on One America Network, not on Newsmax. This is MSNBC. Clip 5 on the polling numbers recently of Joe Biden. Listen.
As new polling suggests, the president receiving his lowest approval rating since taking office. In the latest Quinnipiac University poll, just 38% said they approved of President Biden's performance, compared to 53% who didn't. While Democrats and Republicans responded along party lines, 60% of independents, who, let's remember, played a key role in Joe Biden's 2020 election win, said they disapprove of his standing in office. The president's numbers have fallen off a cliff somewhat in recent months as the administration juggled converging crises both at home and abroad. His approval rating is now down 12 points from a high watermark of 50% in February.
Okay, the 50% in February is not great. I mean, look, you can say, well, at that time, Trump's approval rating was much lower. Yeah, but guess what? Trump didn't win re-election. And no, he didn't. I don't want to. Do we have to get into another argument of who actually won the election? So basically, right now, especially with Mitch McConnell having outplayed Chuck Schumer in dealing with this debt ceiling increase that they needed to make and that they are making at least for another couple of months. I mean, in the New York Times, they are saying that Mitch McConnell played that well, and this may be Mitch's moment. Is everything going for Republicans? Well, no, not everything. There is the problem of internal splits and divisions in the party. And some of them in some of the most solidly Republican states are really serious and a little bit alarming. And one of the people that I increasingly respect is Governor Brad Little of Idaho. And right now, there's basically a headline. There's a headline from CNN, but there's no way to put a good headline on this. The CNN headline says, Idaho's governor accuses lieutenant governor of attempting to deploy National Guard without authorization. Okay. This is such a bizarre story, and it's so embarrassing. And if this were in any less Republican state than Idaho, you would think that this could be political curtains for Republicans. Still might hurt the Republicans. I mean, certainly will hurt them. But when you have a governor and a lieutenant governor who are contesting who is really in charge, listen to this. An extraordinary public feud between Idaho's two top leaders escalated this week when the state's governor, Brad Little, accused fellow Republican lieutenant governor Janice McEachern of overstepping her authority by ordering the state National Guard to the U.S.-Mexico border while he was in Texas visiting the border. Okay, McEachern, who is running for governor next year, also drew Little's ire on Tuesday when she attempted to broaden his executive order banning so-called vaccine passports. Here was the deal. He did an executive order in which he said that there should be no vaccine passports that were necessary for people going into various sealed buildings. She not only thought that was a good idea, but she, while he was away, issued an executive order saying no vaccine mandates of any kind. Now, that had not been the governor's policy. She did that while she was acting governor for 2 days while he was taking a trip to Texas to meet with nine other governors. Before I even left the state, the lieutenant governor unabashedly requested information from the adjutant general to deploy our National Guard to the border, the same place I'm visiting today to work with my fellow Republican governors on solutions to the crisis, Little said in a statement post on Twitter. He traveled to Texas to meet with nine other governors to discuss border security and take a boat tour of the Rio Grande River. Idaho's constitution says that in the event the governor leaves the state, the lieutenant governor takes control of the powers, duties, and emoluments of the governorship until the governor returns. Now, CNN has contacted the Idaho National Guard and McEachern's office for comment, but did not immediately hear back. It was not clear if any agency actually acted or followed McEachern's initiatives, which were to order the National Guard, to order the military to the border. This could be an international incident, aside from being an intra-Idaho incident, where it looks like the lieutenant governor is getting ready to arrest or to do something with the actual governor who's down at the border where she's sending the National Guard. This is nutty. It was not clear if any agency acted or followed McEachern's initiatives. Also, on Tuesday, McEachern tweeted that she had fixed Little's executive order banning vaccine passports to include banning schools, colleges, and universities from requiring COVID-19 vaccinations or a negative COVID-19 test to participate in what they are doing. I will continue to fight for your individual liberty, exclamation point, the lieutenant governor said. 8 minutes later, Little tweeted, I will be rescinding and reversing any actions taken by the lieutenant governor when I return. This is a horrible, when the cat's away, the mice will play kind of undertaking. By the way, anybody who thinks, wow, it's terrific, we love this Lieutenant Governor McEachern, she has been a public supporter of the three percenters who were one of the insurrectionary groups and one of the fairly radical groups who want to do a new American Revolution, who were responsible and participated in the January 6th riots in the Capitol building. And the dispute is the latest episode in an ongoing political skirmish between the state's two top leaders. Little, who was first elected in 2018, has not yet declared whether he'll seek re-election. But ahead of next year's Republican primary, McEachern has sought to establish herself as the champion of the Trump wing of the party while attempting to paint Little as an establishment figure. I hope they can get their Republican house together, because Republican feuding, intramural feuding, is the one way the GOP can bitterly lose this great opportunity coming up. And we'll be coming up with more on the MedVed Show.
I'm of course, deeply honored to receive
The Michael Medved Show.
Thank you, Vice President Gore. Can you believe he won a Nobel Peace Prize? He did. They're announcing Nobel Prizes all over the place. And as usual, the Nobel Prizes are dominated by the United States and our allies, nations of the West, which, by the way, is not because it's a basically Swedish/Norwegian prize. It's because if you talk about where science is going on, scholarship is going on, there is the most meaningful literature and in addition to scientific breakthroughs and some of the most meaningful breakthroughs for peace, well, of course, the West leads the world. And by the way, one of the things that has gotten very little attention but is incredibly good news is the malaria vaccine, which has just been developed, basically certified by the World Health Organization. They're going to start giving malaria vaccines all around the world. And this could save literally millions, not hundreds of thousands, millions of lives a year, because malaria is devastating. I mean, devastating in particular in Africa and parts of Latin America, parts of Asia, which are developing nations. And the only question now is people are very eager to get these vaccines. And and probably ivermectin's not going to be a good substitute for the malaria vaccine. And it's a wonderful thing. And I do think thinking about the gratitude that people are expressing about the prospect of rolling back malaria should remind us of how grateful we should be for this whole technology of vaccinations, which has increased life expectancy so phenomenally. It's eradicated, virtually eradicated, several diseases. Polio has been largely eradicated in the United States, could be eradicated all around the world, except for anti-vaxxers in places like Pakistan, who have actually killed people in the process of making polio vaccines available, because in superstitious villages in remote parts of Pakistan, they believe that this is somehow un-Islamic. It's not. And by the way, there are Islamic medical authorities who are involved with serving people all around the world, and presumably will be as well on this malaria vaccine. But with all of that, there is still panic over climate change. And it's one of those reasons Jen Psaki said this morning that basically we have to suck it up in terms of paying more and more and more money for gasoline. Here was what she said this morning at her presser with a pretty aggressive questioner about the energy prices. Listen, this is clip six.
I mean, I think what COP26 is about is to continue the conversation on the international stage at the leader level. That has been going on below the leader level continuously, basically, about our need to work together to address the climate crisis. One of the greatest national security crises, the presidencies, a number of other world leaders agree on that front. Certainly, we all want to keep gasoline prices low, but the threat of the crisis, the climate crisis, certainly can't wait any longer.
Okay, can't wait any longer. So has there been meaningful progress made on climate issues, climate change issues? Well, Greta Thunberg doesn't think so. She, of course, is the perennial candidate for a Nobel Prize, we were talking about before, which is a joke. She is a teenager who has basically used her moment of celebrity to try to make a passionate case, which tends to be very negative toward President Biden, and even negative toward AOC and the squad. I listened to Greta Thunberg speaking to a crowd over the weekend, last weekend, in Milano about the world leaders not taking enough action on climate change. Clip 11.
There's no planet B. There is no planet blah. No planet blah, 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 blah. This is not about some expensive, politically correct green act of bunny hugging or blah, blah, blah. Build back better, blah, blah, blah. Green economy, blah, blah, blah. Net zero by 2050, blah, blah, blah. Net zero, blah, blah, blah. Climate neutral, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, what? She's talking about bunny hugging? And there is more, and she kept saying blah, blah, blah. It's music to my ears.
Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah. What exactly does Greta Thunberg want? And is this the left to which Joe Biden is surrendering? This is all extraordinary. Speaking of surrendering, there's no surrender, but there is a joint battle. A federal judge late last night blocked enforcement of the Texas bill on abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. A legal blow against a novel law that has severely limited the procedure statewide. This is reported in the Wall Street Journal. U.S. District Judge Robert Pittman in Austin issued a preliminary injunction blocking the law, saying the state had pursued, quote, an unprecedented and aggressive scheme to deprive its citizens of a significant and well-established constitutional right. His order came in a case brought by the Justice Department, which sued Texas last month after abortion rights activists were unable to obtain a court order against the Texas restriction. The law, now known as the Texas Heartbeat Act, or SB 8, has been in effect for a month. It bars physicians from knowingly performing an abortion if there is detectable embryonic cardiac activity. Texas lawmakers designed the measure so that it would be difficult to challenge in court by barring state officials from enforcing the law. Instead, the law delegates enforcement to private parties and authorizes civil damages of $10,000 or more to anyone who successfully sues a defendant accused of performing or even aiding in such an abortion. From the moment SB 8 went into effect, women have been unlawfully prevented from exercising control over their lives in ways that are protected by the Constitution, wrote Judge Pittman. He was, you will not be surprised to hear, an Obama appointee. He wrote a 113-page decision. This simply goes to the fact, and I think this is frankly something that Democrats welcome, the idea of the Texas law and people being sued for helping to drive someone to get an abortion or any participation in abortion at all. This is going to be a very tough issue politically. And I do think that the idea of the law surviving in its current form, if it goes to the Supreme Court, probably unlikely. We will go to more on the Medved Show coming up. Medved Show, there is more news, and again, so much of this is just the evidence of a country that is flying apart on bitter disputes that aren't necessary, that more adequate leadership in the White House, frankly, could do something about. There's this editorial in the Wall Street Journal, and they are entirely correct. And it's one of those things where it is a prospective outrage, which is in the process of becoming a real-life outrage. The Journal writes in its editorial page today, if there's a culture war issue, that Merrick Garland, that's the Attorney General of the United States, won't jump into. We can't think of one. And now the Attorney General is nosing the Justice Department into debates at local school boards. Okay, it is the federal Justice Department. Why should debates at local school boards be its concern at all? Garland's intervention came this week after the National School Boards Association, the NSBA, wrote to President Biden asking the feds to consider if threats and acts directed at school boards could be the equivalent to a form of domestic terrorism and hate crimes. Okay, this has to do with some of the controversies involving curriculum, some of it involving COVID-19 regulations, but areas that should be between school boards and parents. The Wall Street Journal writes, "We hadn't heard that an angry parent is the equivalent of ISIS." But Mr. Garland this week directed the FBI and U.S. attorneys to meet with local law enforcement to find ways to address the, quote, disturbing spike in threats against school board administrators, board members, teachers, and staff. Now, I understand where this is coming from. We played some tape of a gang of what seemed to me to be fairly thuggish activists who had come to the home of a school board member in Sarasota to protest her support for vaccine mandates and mask mandates. And they were shouting at her into her home, and it seemed very threatening. But the point about this is, why is it a federal case? Don't they have law enforcement in Sarasota? And if they have a complaint against these people who are intruding on this woman's home, shouldn't that be properly a statewide case? There's another piece today by Daniel Henninger, his normal Wonderland piece, about all of the offenses by the Biden administration against the idea of federalism, the idea that we have guaranteed under the 10th Amendment to the Constitution such a thing as state powers, which are reserved to the states. And this is one of the reasons, by the way, that the entire drive, remember that they were doing, trying to do the John Lewis bill, and they were trying to do they had another gimmicky name for it, but their sweeping electoral bill, it was House Resolution 1 that was going to take the rights of the states to arrange their own election rules and to grab it by the federal government. Now, by the way, Donald Trump was not the most outstanding figure imaginable, far from it, in terms of protecting or respecting states' rights. But President Biden and Attorney General Garland are much worse. The National Society of School Board Association, their letter cited various disruptions and incidents. In Illinois, a man was arrested after striking a school official escorting him into a meeting. In Michigan, a man gave a Nazi salute and shouted Heil Hitler in protest of masking requirements, and which, of course, is ironic since Hitler was actually an opponent of vaccines. He wasn't pro-vax, he was anti-vax. He thought more people would die that way, which is part of what he was certainly going for in occupied countries. And it also goes on to say that that in Virginia, a man was arrested and another ticketed for trespassing after a raucous meeting whose subjects included the treatment of transgender students. Now, some meetings were suspended amid the arguments. Disrupting a public meeting is inexcusable, and as Attorney General Garland rightly notes, some of these acts may be criminal. The problem is that none of this constitutes a federal offense. That's exactly right. The AG is also getting close to chilling political speech. that is protected by the First Amendment. Invoking Hitler may be dumb and over the top, maybe outrageously offensive, but it is protected speech. Today's school boards are ground zero for some of America's most divisive cultural debates: critical race theory, mask and vaccination policy for teachers and students, the use of racial quotas to deny Asian American students entry to elite public schools, and the COVID-19 response that kept many public schools closed for a year. Citizens have an enormous stake in how these decisions are made. If these debates are more contentious than they ought to be, one problem may be that those running public schools don't think they're accountable to parents. Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate for Virginia governor in what's turning into a very close race, recently made this explicit when he said in a debate, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach," which is an outrageous position. Of course parents have a right, not only a right, but a responsibility to involve themselves with controversial curricula. Many school boards view parents as a nuisance, and that can lead to frustration when people finally get a chance to be heard. Local and state authorities are well equipped to make arrests and to prosecute threats or acts of violence. Parents don't want or need the FBI and federal prosecutors intervening to stifle their legitimate concerns for the education of their children. And this goes to a more fundamental question about the use of the FBI and the use of the Justice Department and distracting these agencies of government, which are there to keep us safe from real threats. And you can argue that a huge attack on the Capitol building, all right, there's violence there, there was property destruction, it was an attack on federal property. That's a legitimate federal concern. But a raucous debate or protest or interjection or disruption of a school board meeting, this requires federal attention that should be used to combating ISIS and Al-Qaeda, especially at a time when they have had this huge encouragement by the president's surrender in Afghanistan and premature withdrawal of the American presence there. Again, if the experts are right, and I think they are, that the danger of real terrorists striking the United States or striking our interests or damaging the welfare and the institutions that Americans, ordinary Americans, depend on, if that has gone up, then aren't we distracting our law enforcement and our justice system with something nakedly political like this, which should be a state and local matter? We'll get back to that and to more on The Medved Show, 1-800-955-1776. On the Michael Medved Show, just a reminder about your opportunity with Balance 7 Water. That's the dietary supplement and alkalizer concentrate that gives you seven benefits. Use Balance 7 Water for more energy, for help with weight loss, for detoxification of your body, relief of heartburn, aid in digestion, and more. And right now, if you go to balance7.com and you use the code AL, that's capital A, capital L, at checkout, you'll receive a free 4-ounce bottle of My Smooth Skin, which is another product, with any purchase of Balance 7 products. Regularly, My Smooth Skin retails at $13.99 a bottle, but it's free with your Balance 7 order. Go to balance7.com. Balance 7 hasn't engendered particular controversy. Of course, the vaccines for coronavirus have engendered quite a bit of controversy. There is good news on that front, however, which is that controversy appears to be subsiding and a consensus appears to be emerging. And it's one of those things where right now there's a bunch of good news. The first of all, the rate of contraction of the disease, of diagnosis of the disease, people who are getting COVID-19 has gone down sharply. The most recent estimate is about 30% in the last 10 days. Now that's good. We're moving in the right direction. And the rate of vaccination has been going up dramatically. The White House credited vaccination requirements, mandates, with cutting the rate of unvaccinated Americans by a full one-third. Now listen to this. When Biden first announced in July that federal employees would be required to get vaccinated or regularly tested, there were 95 million unvaccinated Americans. That figure has now fallen to 67 million. Now, that means almost 30 million more people who got vaccinated. It costs them nothing. It's free. And it's good news. Anybody think it's not good news? And this, it seems to me, is a really important question for people to ask. If you read, and it proves to be true, that there are 30 million Americans who, since July, have gotten vaccinated, that's a lot of people. It's more than a million people a week, right? That's a staggering number. Is there any sense in which that's bad news? That we've gone from about one-third of Americans being unvaccinated to now one-fourth of Americans being unvaccinated? That's a fairly dramatic improvement. And one of the other aspects that they announced today was a whole series, actually they announced it yesterday, a whole series of new ads that are trying to use a different tactic and a different line of appeal to try to make the case that people should voluntarily and to help themselves and help their country step forward and get vaccinated. And some of the ads basically talk about people who have had real experience, real people, real stories with COVID-19. And they're testimonial ads. There's one that features a COVID-19 survivor named Terrell, describing his experience and urging everybody else to get vaccinated as soon as they can, with a camera looking close at his face. He says this, listen.
Hospital for 76 days now, and by the grace of God, I'm still here. It was a lot of dark times then. I died three times. They gave me a 5% chance of living. We take advantage of like simple things in life, like going to the bathroom and brushing your teeth. I have trouble doing all that now, the after effects of COVID. So I highly recommend everybody to get the vaccines and really protect themselves, because this is no joke.
Is that sound appropriate and effective? Another survivor story is featured in the ads from the Health and Human Services Department from the federal government. This is Cole, a 27-year-old husband and father. Listen.
My name is Cole. I'm 27 years old. I'm a husband, a father, a brother, and a son. 2 months ago, I contracted the Delta variant of COVID-19. I haven't been the same man since. I went from being a man who loved to play outside with his children and exercise to a man who barely has enough energy to make it through the day. Whatever the side effects of the vaccine may be, I can promise you they're not worse than this. I urge you, please get vaccinated.
Okay, and one more, Amanda, who's a mother of two. This is her experience, including an 11-day coma. Listen.
I got COVID. I was intubated and in a coma for 11 days. I am a typical mom of two. I work full time. I did not get the COVID vaccine. I was concerned about some of the side effects. However, if I had it to do over, I would definitely go get the COVID vaccine. I know that I was very close to death. The fact that I almost did not come home to my husband and to my children is terrifying.
Okay, these are real people. These are our friends, our neighbors, our fellow citizens. I know so are people who are refusing the vaccine. But when you refuse the vaccine, do you help anybody else? When you get the vaccine, you help the country. Because the more Americans who are actually vaccinated, the more difficult it will be for this thing to spread, the more chance you will have against new variants that may be developed. We do want to come out of this at one point. Nothing would make me happier to never, ever talk about COVID again, because it won't be an issue. And we could get to that point the same way we don't generally talk about the flu, even though that hasn't entirely disappeared by any means. But basically, for our economy, for ourselves, for our lives, this is the direction we should move. They have a whole piece here from the Department of Health and Human Services about switching strategies on vaccines. In any public health battle, the creators have a choice to feature the benefits of a particular intervention, such as vaccination, or feature the consequences of not using that intervention, writes CNN. For many months, the news media has featured stories of unvaccinated people who became ill with COVID-19 and regretted their decision, or stories of family members who lost unvaccinated loved ones to the virus. But the HHS official said that research earlier this year showed it wasn't the best approach for motivating vaccine-hesitant Americans. We have to make sure that if we're putting a piece of creative, a piece of information out into the world, that we're not going to make the situation worse. As people are making up their minds about something, the use of fear can actually work both ways. And their earlier ad campaigns had featured a more positive view about people with families and going on picnics and sailing in boats and all the beautiful things you had to live for. I think they've now come to the conclusion that most people understand that there are beautiful things, things that are worth living for. The text of some of those ads were, go on and live as you want. Feel the sunlight on your face, with a singer crooning in the background. In one ad, as text appears on screen, after a year of saying no, imagine how good it's going to be to say yes. While that might have convinced some people to get vaccinated, it didn't work for everyone. Vaccination rates started to lag last spring. And currently, nearly one in four eligible Americans still has not had a COVID-19 vaccination of any kind, not even one, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The new batch of ads is much tougher. The HHS official said that recent research shows that testimonials from people who have survived COVID-19 appeal to the unvaccinated, and so they went on social media and found selfie videos from two survivors and an intensive care unit nurse. Is this appropriate? Does it bother anybody out there? We can continue to talk about this, but as I mentioned, I certainly hope that continued progress in vaccinations, continued progress in treatment and making more room in hospitals, that all of that will make it totally unnecessary to speak again or forever in the future about COVID-19 and the vaccination campaign in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Sign up today for the free MedVid newsletter with new columns, commentaries, and movie reviews. Go to